everybody. Welcome to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. How's it going, Nick?
It's going good. How are you?
Not too bad. So let's get straight to the topic. Today's topic is different study methods. So how about listening, speaking, reading, and writing? Take it away, Nick.
What was the first one? Speaking?
Listening.
Sorry, listening. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I think
oh, listening, the irony.
I think listening, you know, for I probably just disproved everything I'm just about to say. But I think, yeah, listening is really super important. I mean, it's single-handedly the thing that I need to improve the most, you know, because so much of the world is listening. So many of the Japanese people out there are speaking Japanese. You know, that can be quite difficult. And so I think just listening to more and more and more and more and more Japanese and trying to listen, for instance, in dramas or anime or whatever it means, might be to different topics and re-listen and re-listen and re-listen and try and figure out how all these pieces come together is, yeah, it's a really super important skill. I actually tend to think it's probably more important at least than speaking. How about you? Where do you, do you tend to think listening is really important?
Yeah. Well, I introduced them in order of importance to me. Like, I think listening is the most important. Then after that, I would say speaking, then reading, mm-hmm. then writing. I think to become proficient in Japanese, you should devote a lot of your time to listening. The earlier you do that, and the more time you allocate to that, I think the more proficient you'll become.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big problem that I had in my early, you know, years of studying Japanese, is I really didn't do all that much listening at all. Because I would listen and I wouldn't understand. And so it's easy to stick to what you can understand, which is, you know, which is reading, because you can labor over it until you finally get the meaning and get that sort of feeling of satisfaction from doing it that way. But whereas listening, it's kind of it's happening and then it's over, and you either understood it or you didn't, and so it can easily really bring you down if you're just trying to listen to conversations and you just can't get it. So what did you do specifically, Derek, when you were to improve your listening? I mean, did you was it through mostly listening, for instance, to people, or was it mostly, you know, just you in your room listening to Japanese dramas and anime? Did you do it through, I don't know, some other method? What methods did you employ to improve your listening ability?
At the beginning, it was mainly watching Japanese movies, dramas, and anime, any kind of series. Some of the stuff was on my TV, some of the stuff was on my computer. I just watched a lot of stuff like that over and over. Only interesting stuff that I really thought was good to watch. I wouldn't bother watching something that I thought sucked. I just watched a lot of good shows, and some of them, it seemed really interesting, but I couldn't really understand the content. But maybe if there was, you know, a really cool guy or like a really good looking girl or some kind of cool action scene or something in the movie, it would kind of push me to watch it again just to try and understand the content. So things like that just have some meaning. Like, why do you want to understand this? Do you just want to understand it for the sake of understanding it, or do you actually want to know what they're talking about?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think in a previous podcast we were talking about anime and the benefits of anime, and although there are plenty of benefits to anime, I think when it comes to listening, you can't really go wrong with dramas. I think dramas are a fantastic way to to really, really practice a lot of listening in a lot of different contexts, in a lot of different environments. There's a lot of dramas which are high school-based dramas where you get a lot of very loose, young language. And then you get a, and then there's also a lot of ones which are, might be, you know, period dramas. You also get a lot of comedies and things like that. So you've got a really wide spectrum. And dramas, in particular, Japanese dramas, as far as I can tell, are really heavily conversation-based. They're probably more conversation-based than, for example, and a lot of maybe American dramas, which, you know, they have a massive budget and they're really largely sort of spectacle-based.
Another thing, too, that a lot of the conversations that you'll see on different TV shows, I think we've mentioned this before, that usually in a textbook they'll have the subject or the verb or the object in a particular order. It's always very strict. It follows the textbook order. But in real conversation, it doesn't really happen that way. The subject is often omitted from the sentence completely, and sometimes the verb and everything else is just completely changed in terms of order. You would never see this kind of structure in a textbook, but in real conversations with real people or in TV shows, you see it a lot. And I think this might be hard for some people when they try to expose themselves to real Japanese if their only background was a textbook at the beginning. They'll think, like, well, what are you talking about? Like, there's no subject. You didn't say you or you didn't say her. It's just omitted. So that could be really confusing for some people.
It was very confusing for me. It took me a long time to get used to it, especially when it was talking about something that someone else said that who isn't present at that current, you know, meeting of two people. So if there's me and you talking, for example, in this Japanese drama, and then we are talking about something that somebody else said who is not in that scene. And then, yeah, I often used to find that, I remember distinctly finding that difficult, because I was thinking, well, who said that it was, you know, who said that thing? You know, and who is someone saying it to the other person? Are they saying it to that person they're talking to? Or?
Right, it becomes really abstract.
Yep, it does. I think it becomes a little bit abstract to Japanese people are too sometimes. I think Japanese sometimes occasionally, reinsert a subject just to make sure, you know, who they're talking about and make sure that everyone's all, you know, everyone's all clear on who the subjects are and everything.
Yes, and I noticed that a lot of people, they'll say the sentence and then there'll be like a pause and then they'll insert the subject, like who did it or who said it or...
Yeah,
who is doing something.
Yeah, they do that. Japanese people often do that with objects as well, where they'll say something about an object and then they'll insert the object at the end. Yeah.
Right. After just a pause.
That's right, yeah, just to sort of reconfirm.
Mm-hmm.
So listening though, I fill my ears with Japanese probably for quite a few hours every day. And I've really noticed the benefit in that, in just my general ability out in the real world to catch what other people are saying and to pick up on meaning and to form meaning and things like that, you know. It's really helped me. Even though I'm not necessarily studying their voice in particular, I've noticed that the listening ability in general has increased, and so my awareness, my net for catching more information has also increased.
Right. I think the best thing with improving your listening is just being able to reduce your reaction time, like being able to react quickly, like when somebody says something, like if you can comprehend it and react at that moment, rather than taking some time to think about what they said, then thinking about what you want to say, then saying it. Think of it like, you know, in basketball, like you want to be able to do an alley-oop. You don't want to just catch the pass, dribble, set up, then dunk. You want to just do the alley-oop, do it all in one fluid motion.
That's a good way to think of it, actually. I think what often happens, you know, it's natural that this happens in early stages, but I think what happens is as you're listening, you tend to be converting, or trying at least to convert, everything that you're hearing into, you know, your native language, if it be English. You're trying to convert everything into English, and then you are, you know, before you actually say something, you're taking an English sentence in your brain, kind of changing, flipping that over into Japanese, and then coming out with the Japanese. And then, yeah, that process takes, I mean, it takes quite a long time, especially, well, it took a long time for me. I think it's the more you listen, the more you're able to appreciate things within their own language. And it gets to a point now where, for instance, if I'm watching a drama or if I'm watching an anime, I don't really ever think of what they're saying in English. And when I think about what they would be saying in English, it's always something that it's like a task I need to now approach. I need to now think, okay, so they said this in Japanese. How would I translate that into English? It's not something which back earlier, it used to be some automatic thing. It was actually the only way I felt like I could kind of properly understand things.
Right, I think that's the major benefit of learning through an immersion method. Like when you just submerse yourself into the language and just kind of not really rely on your native language, just trying to figure everything out as it is. That's why immersion is just so much better.
Yep. And so how about the second one, speaking? I personally wouldn't put that number two, but you have. So explain to me why you think it's the next important thing.
Well, actually, I think reading could be number two, actually. I think there are some major benefits to being able to read. But I put speaking at number two just because the interactions that you go through on a daily basis. Like, if you can't speak, it's going to be really hard to get along in Japan or to do anything. So I just think it's a really, really necessary skill. Listening is obviously the most important, but I would say, like, speaking is the partner to that one. And the good thing is, with speaking, I don't think you actually have to practice speaking. I think if you can listen, like if you can catch everything, you can speak.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. It's interesting that you would say that for someone who I know from experience is very good at speaking. So I've always thought that, or rather I've always wished that to be true. And I've always feared that, maybe it's something that I actually really need to be doing more practice in, you know, actually going out and just going out and speaking to people to practice my quote-unquote speaking skill. But I've been thinking that that's possibly not true, so it's nice to hear confirmation on that idea. That I really think that's true. What you're saying is that one of the most important things about listening is just how it influences speaking. I really think it's fairly natural that listening a lot improves speaking in a lot of ways. It improves, I believe, pronunciation, it improves intonation, it improves your ability to understand, you know, obviously different dialects and things like that, because you're hearing different dialects. It improves, obviously, your ability to kind of be able to respond in the right way when you're speaking to people. And I just really think that for people who want to improve their speaking ability, which is, you know, admittedly one of the more flashy ways to show off a language ability, I think one of the best ways you can do that, strangely, is just to listen more.
Right. I'm going to go on for about like 5 minutes now, so if you want to go get a coffee now, it's probably a really good time. But when I was in Canada, I think it was in my third or fourth year of university, just in the late fall, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the weather in Canada, but it snows there a little bit. And basically in the winter, I hibernate. I just stay inside. I don't go outside at all. Like, I hate winter. I hate the cold, really. But I had some Japanese friends that I, you know, occasionally met in the summer and in the fall, and I couldn't really converse with them at any level at that point. But I just continued going to my Japanese class as normal. I didn't really progress much in terms of the class because of the class. But just I was watching a lot of TV shows at that time, a few hours every day, and some of the shows I was watching over and over. And basically I kind of just locked myself into my room for the winter. Like, I had nothing to do outside, so I just stayed inside and just watched a lot of Japanese shows. And after about, I don't know, maybe 4, 5, 6 months of doing that, like, when spring came and it started to get sunny again and the snow melted, I went outside again. And I met some of those Japanese friends again, and I could basically understand almost everything they were saying, and I could converse with them. And they were all really surprised. Like, they were saying, oh, how come you can speak so well now? Like, have you been studying a lot, or did you get, like, a Japanese girlfriend or something? They had all these, you know, questions, and I was just thinking, like, really? Like, I couldn't speak before? Like, I had no idea, because I wasn't really doing anything that different. I was just watching a lot of TV shows, you know, anime, dramas, movies, over and over, and I just absorbed a lot of language, and it was like maybe a 4, 5, or 6 month transformation, and they were really surprised. I didn't notice, because for me it was obviously very gradual. But for them, it went from this guy who doesn't speak any Japanese, really, to a guy that can understand, like, a really, really good amount.
Yeah.
So that was my experience. And obviously, I was in my room alone by myself, so I wasn't practicing speaking. I was just listening, but I gained the ability to speak.
Yeah. I think you know, you need to develop an ability to speak to a very, very, you know, it's a very small amount, actually, you know, and then everything else, like you've just proven by that example, everything else is just listening ability. I think it becomes dangerous if you're overthinking when you're speaking.
Right.
You know, when you're thinking, well, now would be a good time to insert, you know, daro or something like that into the conversation. And so instead, what you do when you're listening all the time, all the time, all the time, is it just comes out of your mouth without you even really thinking about it. I remember even last year when I was talking to people, I was kind of stressed, you know, I was kind of like tight when I was talking to people. Yeah, Japanese people in a workplace can be kind of stressful anyway, but they're made more stressful because it's like, oh, now I need to understand it. I've got this voice in the back of my head just, you know, yelling at me, like, understand everything, like, listen intently, what are you doing, come on, you know, what's the meaning, you know, let's, and just kind of yelling at me like that. It doesn't really happen anymore. I'm more kind of relaxed about it now, and I just walk over to people and talk to them, or someone will come over to me and just talk to me, and I'm just kind of, you know, pretty relaxed about the whole thing. But in any case, I think that's just come about mostly, not through speaking practice necessarily, it's just come about once again just through listening. Just, I've become more comfortable around other people, and normally the right thing just kind of spills out of my mouth. And that will just, I just think it will continue to happen as time goes on. I think if you're in a situation where you're saying more than you're listening, and you are like, you can say more than you understand, I think that's a bad situation to be in. Even though you will seem to be kind of impressive, maybe to more people out in the Japanese environment, I think it's a bad situation to get in. I think you should be able to understand what other people are saying much better than your ability to actually be able to actually sort of vocalize your thoughts yourself.
Right, and I think another thing that can be really dangerous is when people start to get creative, when they start to think. So maybe they're thinking in their native language, then they're trying to put that into Japanese. You should never be in that situation, I think. It's kind of like breathing. You know, sometimes when you start to focus on your breathing,
yeah,
you end up getting out of breath.
Yeah.
So you kind of do it properly, you know, subconsciously. Your language ability, your speaking ability should be like that. You shouldn't really have to think about it. If you have to remember the word or you have to think about the sentence, you're probably not going to say it the right way. So just listen more and let it come out naturally.
Yeah, that's to not be self-conscious when you're speaking, I think it's easier said than done, especially for someone like me who's very self-conscious. But I think the answer is what we've just been sort of saying over and over and over. It's just more listening. The answer is not to beat yourself up about being too self-conscious. It's just to listen more. And eventually it will seem like, you know, the words are just kind of coming out. Before I just said they just, you know, kind of came out, you know, the words just came out. Because that's the way it does feel, to me at least. It just, the idea has just come out, it's just out in the open before I've really had a lot of chance to really kind of think about it, which is the exact thing that's happening right now when I'm speaking to you in English. I mean, I'm sort of thinking about it and it's coming out of my mouth sort of at the same time, or it's, you know, it's working, you know, they're working together in a nice combo. It's not really some painful process.
Ideally, it sounds like music and not someone puking, right? Anyway, how about reading?
Yeah, let's get on to reading. Would you like to go first?
Well, how about you go ahead with this one? I think, well, first of all, I'll just say, like, I think speaking and reading, they're probably at about the same level of importance, but reading involves a lot more conscious effort.
It does indeed. I love reading. I really, really love reading. There's a documentary by Stephen Fry all about language. And I think one of his episodes, or even more than one of his episodes, just focuses almost exclusively on the idea of reading. And I love that episode. And I just love the idea of different scripts in the world and everything like that. I personally, since I also have a dream of being a translator, it makes, I guess, a lot of sense also that I like reading. Reading to me is very, very important. Reading in Japanese is not easy. But it's you know, something that I'm willing to invest a lot of time in, you know, as we've discussed in previous podcasts with kanji and whatnot. I'm willing to invest a lot of time in because I just love reading and I just think it's that important. There's a man, Stephen Krashen, was a man who early in his career was very, very interested in the immersive environment, very, very interested in immersion schools and things like that. But later in his career, which I presume he's, you know, still very interested in it now, he's very, very interested in reading and the benefits of reading and the importance of libraries and schools and things like that. And I don't think it's an accident. This is a generalization, but I don't think it's an accident that in your first language, often when you're in school, the quote unquote smart kids in the class are normally the kids also that are reading a lot of books. I don't think it's because they're smart that they're reading books. I think it's probably the other way around. They're smart because they read a lot of books.
Right.
And that's just an opinion. I can't really back that up with anything necessarily. I would imagine that Stephen Krashen would probably agree with me though, and strangely, you can improve other skills by reading. Well, certainly you can improve your ability to write. I mean, that's a given.
Well, also your speaking ability, because you're going to get new words, you're going to improve your vocabulary, and you'll get new expressions, and just more knowledge. If you have more knowledge on a particular topic, you can talk about it more, right?
Yeah, that's right. I really think it's really important. You've hit the nail on the head with that. I think you just study more words, you see more grammar in action, you see language, you know, sometimes in its most beautiful. You see it in its most expressive, you see it in its most poetic. and you get all the, like I've discussed with you in a much earlier podcast, I discussed the idea of reading and getting all these flow of images in your mind. And to me, that's a very satisfying aspect of learning. And it's something that, yeah, I would not want to give up. It's one of my prime reasons for continuing to study Japanese, is I get to enjoy, you know, just the joy of reading. Yeah, so how about yourself in regards to read?
I read a lot. I remember when I first started trying to read in Japanese, it really took a lot of energy. Like, it was a really resource-demanding activity. Like, I remember, like, buying some manga, like, stuff with furigana, and I just remember, like, reading, like, maybe something like a chapter from a certain manga, and then being really, really tired after that. It just took a lot out of me. And I just progressed with it slowly over the years, and gradually I became better and better. And now it's to the point where I don't even need pictures anymore. It's really wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great thing, and like we've just discussed before, I actually think it improves other things. It might even improve speaking. I mean, that's a further jump to make, but since it improves listening so much, and since listening, as we've just been discussing a lot, is so important for speaking, mm-hmm. it tends to also, infect, and improve your speaking ability as well, I believe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So lastly, let's move on to prove I have been listening, writing.
Very good.
Yeah.
So, in terms of writing, this is probably the most resource-demanding skill in Japanese. It's going to take a while. Being able to write in Japanese is good. Like, writing by hand is one thing, but most people nowadays, I think, they've lost the skill to write by hand. Like, most people who work a job where it doesn't really require too much writing. Like, I know quite a few people, maybe this is just my demographic of Japanese friends, but some people, other than their name and their address, they can't really write that well.
What do you mean, Japanese people?
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty typical thing in schools, in Japanese schools, for example, that the students are much better at writing kanji than the teachers. Or maybe the teachers are okay. Maybe the teachers are okay because they're teachers. But if you were to get in some random adult off the street, the students' writing would be far better than that adult's.
Well, just in my experience, there are quite a few times where the students correct the teachers who are writing on the board.
Yeah.
Like, well, this is obviously the teachers that I'm with, they're not Japanese language teachers. So maybe it's different for a Japanese language teacher because they're obviously, up to date and they're always reviewing all the kanji.
Yeah.
But, for example, a science teacher or an English teacher or a social studies teacher, they occasionally make mistakes and the students will correct them.
Yeah.
I think if you compare yourself as a foreigner to, like, modern Japanese people, obviously they're fluent in their language and they're capable of emailing each other. But in terms of writing by hand, it seems like this skill is dying out. I really respect it as a skill, though. When I get, like, a handwritten letter or some kind of New Year's card, it just looks really, really good. It's like art. And I buy books about calligraphy, like pen calligraphy. I'm not really interested in the brush that much. It looks cool, but not for me. I'm just sticking to the pen.
Yeah.
I may use a fountain pen if I feel fancy. But but yeah, I do really appreciate the writing of the language.
Yep. Yeah.
It's a skill that I have to work on, but it's not at the top of my list.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in a previous podcast, I've mentioned to you that I practice writing, you know, all of the kanji as I was studying them. And that was largely for the purpose of being able to remember them more easily. But it's also, you know, they're quickly slipping away from me now that I'm not really practicing them that much. But I have found there to be the occasional benefit when I would like to express an idea which I can't quite get across, but I know a kanji which has a similar meaning to it. That happened more in early days. It doesn't happen quite as much now anymore, and I can imagine it will continue to decline how much that sort of, you know, I'll need that kind of resource. And then, yeah, as for writing, I agree with you 100%. I it's beautiful, it's wonderful to see actually handwritten things in Japanese. I think they look really good. But I like you, question the worth of actually studying writing in a very serious way. I think a lot of people studying Japanese feel much the same way about writing. I think it really can be put on the back burner on really, really, you know, low heat. You're really not going to need to use it all that much, probably for a long time. You know, I don't think it's all that. I don't imagine there's very many Japanese learners out there that need to concentrate on writing like nengajō, as in you know, New Year's cards or anything like that. So I really don't think the handwritten skill is all that important. But it goes back to what you were saying before as well about not being creative in Japanese. I tend to disagree a little bit. I actually think it's a good idea to be creative in some formats, like in the previously mentioned Lang 8. I actually like being creative in that format because it's being corrected and because it helps me study and it helps me see the ways in which, you know, things are actually used and the ways in which verbs and whatever it might be are actually used. But
I think, though, it's not necessarily writing by hand, but like using a keyboard. I think composition has a lot of value. I think composition is really important. Not in terms of creativity. I mean, creativity is not good when you're trying to create structures in the language. Maybe you're thinking in English and then trying to mimic that in Japanese. I think that's what's bad with creativity. But I think composition, like if you're writing an essay or maybe even a blog post or something, anything really, or a tweet or something, I think there's a lot of value in that because if you can put your words onto paper or into some kind of post, usually it does something in your brain. Like somehow your thoughts become more clear when you do it this way.
Yep.
So I think there's a lot of value in being able to compose. But in terms of writing by hand, I think maybe it's more of an art form or convenient sometimes if you can write something really cool.
This is just a theory of mine, but I tend to think that the application of knowledge is really important to us as humans. I really think it might go all the way back to, you know, early, more primitive days of humans, that, you know, they wanted to be able to only take in the information that was relevant to them, you know, in the present or in the very near future. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons why our brains seem to be like, you know, this is just a theory of mine, but, you know, one of the reasons why our brains seem to be kind of like leaky buckets is because our brain wants us to use the information almost straight away. And it wants us to be using information all the time. That's kind of a small aside, though. I think if I were to talk about, you know, to summarize the way that my feelings towards all of these different skills, I would definitely, the same as you, I'd put listening at the top. Listening might be whatever, like I say, you know, 40% of 100% of everything that you do in Japanese, 40% is listening. And then, there might be, say, whatever it might be, like a 25% would be for reading, 25% would be for speaking, might even be less for speaking, in my personal opinion. And then And then the remainder would be for writing. It might even be even less. So that's the kind of thing. It's a really tiny percentage by comparison, writing compared to the others. Is that roughly the percentages that you would give to studying, Derek?
Yeah, I'd probably give it the same allocation as you. Something around that.
Cool.
Awesome. So do you want to cut here?
That's a good spot to end it.
Awesome. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you next time on Guys Learning Japanese.
See ya.
Okay, thanks for listening to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. Send your questions to glj@gmail.com. We'll answer your questions on the show.